Hey, everybody. This show is brought to you by Cody Akins at AkinsPCRepair.com. Just had somebody, a member of the 11, put up a thank you note to Cody Akins in the podcast listeners page on Facebook. And so thank you for doing that. Thank you for anybody who goes to him and lets me know or lets the other 11 know, because this is how we maintain our community, by supporting the people that support this godforsaken show. But Cody doesn't have to do it. He doesn't need to stick with us. He doesn't have to stick with you guys, but he does because he knows this audience is loyal. He knows this audience is smart. He knows this audience doesn't like getting ripped off and isn't going to just blow a bunch of money. That's what you're going to do when you go to the big box guys, when you go to the geek squads and the dork groups and the nerd murders. Whatever you do, don't go to the nerd murders. They are awful. Cool name, awful product. Go to Cody Akins if you need your computer fixed, if you need it cleaned, if you need a new computer, if you need a new iPhone, if you need a new tablet, if you have something with a screen that isn't working very well, take it to Cody. I guarantee you he can fix it, make it run better, or sell you a better one if there's a remote chance, then this does happen, there's no way he can fix it. But that rarely happens. So take it to Cody Akins at AkinsPCRepair.com. He's smart. He's capable. His name is on the business. There's no guy named Geek Squad. There's no guy named Nerd Murder, though there should be, because it sounds awesome. Cody, if you're listening and you change your name from AkinsPCRepair.com to Nerd Murder, I'm not saying it's an improvement, but it would be kind of cool. AkinsPCRepair.com. Make my computer guy your computer guy. Go to AkinsPCRepair.com.
Listen to this.
Because
it could save your life.
Yeah, buddy. It is that show. Listen to the show because it could save your life. Welcome to the show. All my screaming corn babies, all my sugar bears, all my lit spice slicers, and all of my listeners. It's me, Jonathan. I got my buddy Rob, my buddy James joining me on the show today, as they often or always do. How are you guys doing today?
Always, sometimes.
Always, sometimes. My facts today are this. Why is there a statue of George Washington in Trafalgar Square in Britain, in England? Second fact is, what happened
when... He laid a lot of pipe over there.
He did. Oh my God! When George Washington slept here, no, George Washington knocked up some. Oh, he pulled down some sweet, sweet pussy here. What happened when a major company experimented with a 4-day work week? What happened when they went, let's just see if instead of making people work 5 days, we have them work 4 days? And how did Marlon Brando used to screen his calls? See, I don't know if you know this, Marlon Brando, a fucking weird man. And yeah. Samuel L. Jackson found out that Marlon Brando had a very weird system for screening his calls, and it's a great story that I'll share with you guys later on. James, what are your facts?
I have a fact about alchemy in 1980.
Okay.
I have a fact about a bizarre, seemed to be, sickness that was befalling people in Victorian England and the cause of it.
Okay.
And I have a fact about some contraband that was smuggled onto a space mission.
Ooh. Interesting. Rob, what do you got?
I want to hear about the spacemen who thumbed dope up their ass. I have a fact about an invasion of Australia. I have a fact about a cattle rustler in Nevada.
Oh.
A cattle rustler.
Okay.
And I also have a fact about the executioner. In the days of old when
how would they do it?
To be executed.
Mm.
And it was customary to tip.
Tip the executioner?
Yes.
That's fascinating. There's actually, you know, a great podcast called Hardcore History that I recommend everybody should listen to because it's fascinating. He's so good. It takes him like 6 months to put out one show just because they're really that good. And he did an entire show on the history of pain. And
mostly focusing on torture and execution and things like that. And it is.
How much of a discussion was there about the House of Pain?
Top of the morning to ya.
Yeah, right.
It is in effect, y'all.
No, but there were a lot of there was a lot of talk about how, like, basically back in the day, if you were if you just had your head cut off, that was like the most merciful thing that they could do to you. Like that, there was breaking on the wheel. There was the
drawing and quartering.
There was a thing in Germany just called the ordeal. That's one of the most horrifying things I've ever heard of. Where they put you in a box, heat the box up so you're burning inside of it. Then they reach in with tongs and just start ripping your flesh off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's good. It's fun, fun stuff that
sounds
we used
like
to do.
Sounds like a bit of an ordeal.
It almost ordeal seems like it's undercutting it. Oh, it was an ordeal, wasn't it?
It was a bit of an ordeal.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. But right now it's time for a cameo review.
Cameo.
Review.
Review it. Review it. Review it.
And our cameo.
We got, but we came back strong.
Came back strong with this one, baby. Cameo review, where we go on the website cameo.com, find celebrities who are selling themselves short and out for money, and to say whether it's worth it. Dennis Rodman is our celebrity today.
Wait,
and yes,
didn't Dennis Rodman die in Korea?
Dennis Rodman's career died in Korea. He unfortunately is very much still alive.
Ah, made a best friend.
The Worm was his nickname. Remember that in the 90s? His nickname was The Worm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was a thing. I don't know why. Can somebody tell me why his nickname was The Worm? Does he look worm-like?
I know he was really good at rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It was the entire thing. Five-time NBA champion, two-time defensive player of the year, seven-time rebounding champion, global ambassador.
Wait.
Because he went to Korea, made friends with Kim Jong-un. So, global ambassador. Saving the world one day at a time is what it says about him.
Uh-huh.
All right. So
was involved with Carmen Electra for a while.
He was, and maybe it's worth that because she is still... I don't know if you watched that Last Dance documentary about the Bulls in the 90s, specifically mostly about Michael Jordan, but it's really good. And they interview Carmen Electra a lot, and guess who still is amazingly hot?
Dennis Rodman.
Yes.
You?
Yes. But also Carmen Electra. All right, so here is what you get when you do a cameo with Dennis Rodman. I'm not going to tell you how much it costs right now, but here is one example. This is for a birthday celebration.
What's up, Victor?
First of all... Could he be farther away or closer to the microphone right now? It's both very loud and very distant. How does that happen? He's filling up the room with sound. And also, if you look... Hold on. I need to share the screen with you guys. If you see the video, he's like 10 feet away from the camera. Hold on. Share. There. Can you see him?
Yes.
Yeah, he's like 10 feet away from the camera, and also...
And he looks like a Madame Tussauds wax sculpture.
Screaming at the top of his lungs!
Dude, what's up, man? Love his style, baby. Love is beautiful. What's going on, man?
All right, Dennis, you just need to get to the point. Like, just start
the
video.
He looks like a Madame Tussauds wax sculpture.
Right.
He looks rough.
Like, if I'm his cameo coach, I'm going to say, okay, you start with the person's name, you address why they are... having you do the cameo so that you
the
can
lighting's, the lighting's
that's
bad.
What they're into
that's not helping with those
let's get that out of the way. Also, don't make sure you look like you are a living human being and not that you've been dead for a very long time.
We showed up late to the wake and it's really time to close the box.
Yeah, speak interpersonally. Don't yell at them like you're trying to get their attention from across the mall.
I heard you mention, right? You know, arigato, minasan. Is that Russian? No, it's not Russian. Right? It's kind of Japanese, right?
But was that a racial joke?
I don't know. He said, so I heard you're Russian, and then he said, domo arigato, and then something else, and went, that's Japanese.
I think he said it's kind of Japanese.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Hey, man, I know you're Russian, right? Guess what, man? You're 20 what? 30? Oh, man. At 30, I was doing one thing. I was in Detroit making money, love and style. Are you making money, brother? No, you're not today. You probably are because all you guys still.
What?
What the fuck?
Okay, you're turning 30. You know what I was doing when I was 30? I was in Detroit making money because he's playing for the Pistons, which, good for you being the only person to ever make money in Detroit besides Henry Ford. Are you making money? No, you're not. But yes, you are, because
deal money, not like deals. But either way,
you're making love money. So it's like he realized, it's this thing, this hubristic thing that you see with these celebrities on Cameo all the time. Like they want to rub it in that they're celebrities. They want to rub it in that they're rich, but then they realize, wait, that comes off wrong. Because it's not about me. It's supposed to be about this person, right? So it's really hard for them because their entire life is all about celebrating themselves. That's what makes them celebrities, is celebrating themselves. But then they have these other people that they're supposed to be celebrating, and they don't know how to do it. It's like speaking a foreign language, like speaking French and going, ach, ach de lieber, you know, as Dennis Rodman would say if he was trying to speak French. Ich bin ein Dennis Rodman. All right.
Tell Putin, love him. But either way, love his style. Happy 30th birthday.
Love is what?
Style.
Love is style.
I don't know. I don't think he was speaking English there.
No, I think that was his version of English.
Hey, man, hope you're doing well. Your family and your kids, whatever you got, love his style. Dion, thank you, brother. Shouting out, brother. But either way, Victor. Happy 30th birthday.
Why does the end of that feel like when you've said goodbye to somebody and then you're both start walking in the same direction? Oh, yeah, see you later. Oh, you're going this way too? Okay, all right. Well, cool. See ya. Bye. Oh, your car's there. Cool, okay.
Did he just change people he was talking to in the middle of that?
He didn't know anything. He's like, you know, your family, your kids, whatever you got.
Yeah, whatever you got going on. I don't care.
Whatever you
got.
Love their style.
I know you turned 30 and you're poor. How much do you think Dennis Rodman costs for one cameo?
Oof. It's got to be a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oof.
Just because it's Dennis Rodman.
Right, and he's so full of himself, he would have to charge a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Oof. I see it right there. But
oh, dup. There you go. So anyway, Rod, who I don't think was looking.
I was not paying attention. I assume it's like $200 or something.
$200? You thought that was a lot for Rodman?
Bump that up, Pally.
Well, guess what?
Those rookie numbers.
It's at least three times up. That much, because it is $750.
No shit.
$750.
Somebody paid $750 for that piece of shit video?
To be insulted by Dennis Rodman, yeah. Yeah.
How fucking mad would you be?
I don't know. Like, that video seemed more like it would have been, because they do this on Cameo a lot, they do roast videos. It wasn't a birthday celebration. It was just him being a dick. Like, you're poor, I make more money than you. Like, well, I would hope so. That's why you're on Cameo and I'm not. Like, that's
I do like, and it's related to a Patreon exclusive show, but that you have a tab open that says penis.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
doesn't everyone?
It's a Google search for penis. So if you want to know why I was Googling penis, you need to listen to our Patreon shows, because otherwise you'll have no idea and just
Lord knows I always have my penis tab with me.
Yeah, I Google penis all the time. I was Googling my penis earlier. I mean penis earlier, not my penis.
John Weir's actually, penis. How much does it make a year?
Jonathan Weir's penis.
Net worth.
It comes up with a figure skater, Johnny Weir, and all about his penis, which everybody wants to hear about all the time.
We've all seen that.
We've all heard. Okay, so $750, is that worth it? I would say absolutely not. On this,
not
one.
Even a little
That's
bit.
A big. And don't get me wrong, I understand the appeal of Rodman. I watched that Last Dance documentary. I think that he's a fascinating human being. I don't even hate him necessarily for the Kim Jong Un stuff, because, like, what harm was he really doing? I mean, he's not giving Dennis Rodman isn't giving any legitimacy to the North Koreans or Kim Jong-un.
No.
I mean, he's a joke and everybody knows it. Except for him.
The question, did he That's wear his championship rings when he went?
I'm assuming he probably showed those off, yeah. Yeah. So. All right. There we go. Not worth it. Don't do it. Unless you,
if you
want
just
to
chat
money.
With them, $19.99.
All right, time for facts.
Facts.
Facts are facts.
Wow, interesting.
I'm saying fact, by the way. Just it did kind of sound like I was saying another word. All right, my first fact is this. Why George Washington's statue in London isn't on British soil? So there's a statue of George Washington in Trafalgar Square, which is a square that was created, I believe, in the early 1800s to celebrate the victory over Napoleon at Trafalgar, one of England's greatest victories of all time. And in that square now, in one of the corners, is a statue of George Washington, which is weird. You wouldn't think it would be there. There would be, why would they have it there? That would be like, I don't know, the having like a statue of Robert E. Lee or something in a northern state. Something like that.
Crazy talk.
Well, actually, no, I guess not, because George Washington won and Robert E. Lee was a loser. So there's that.
It does seem odd. That would be an enemy of England, I would think. The colonies and all that business.
And do also, it's interesting.
An age on the fountain or the statue.
The statue.
Although now I want to see a George Washington fountain.
Where he's just
Just spitting water right into King George's face.
Okay,
he was 1921.
The statue was presented to the British as a gift in 1921.
1921.
It was actually a gift from America to England.
Hey.
Wow.
Hey, guys. Yeah.
The balls on us.
Yeah. It's an exact replica of an original statue commissioned by Thomas Jefferson, which can still be seen in the Virginia State Capitol building in Richmond, and it does not stand on English soil. It was, not only did we give them this statue, but it's with Virginia soil. So he stands only on Virginia soil in the statue. He said, and the reason they put it up is because the legend has it that George Washington once swore he would never set foot on British soil again, and that's why they have the Virginia soil underneath them. The idea of having it there is because England is comfortable with their losses in the past and doesn't have the American thing of, we've never lost a fucking war that mattered. And so they're fine with it being there because Trafalgar Square is a remembrance of one of their greatest victories. So why not also have a remembrance of one of their greatest defeats right there, which I think is really big of them. So good on them.
And again, just won that that great war together.
Yeah. So. But it does answer a question that came up by a lot of simpletons about 5 years ago when we were talking about taking down Confederate statues around the United States. And people said things like, well, is there a statue of George Washington in England? And there actually is a statue of George Washington in England, but for an entirely different reason. We don't have statues of Confederate soldiers in the North to remind us of any victory by the Confederates. We have it up there to remind, you know, insecure white people that one time you were able to own other people.
Hmm?
Yeah.
I still got a wife, don't I?
Yep, still do. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. All right, James, what's your first fact?
My first fact, and I will get into it because Rod was excited about this one, is not about keistering dope up in space because you want to. I mean, you're already pretty high, but you want to get higher.
Yeah. Yeah. Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? Can you get high on pot through your butt?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Sure, you can.
I guess so. Yeah.
I think you can.
Yeah.
I know.
I have that Nutella. Could I just cram that up in there? I guess that would probably absorb through the colon, right?
Yes. Yeah. I actually met some people one time who swore by putting chunks of hash up their ass that was the best way to get high on hash. I was like, basically, I'm going to sit here and smoke it, and y'all are fucking weird, and you're not invited over anymore.
What's the difference between hash and just marijuana?
It's a completely different animal.
Oh, is
marijuana
it?
Is a plant. Mm-hmm. Hash is something made from that plant.
Oh, okay.
And it's yeah. It's
is like it more potent? Brick. Is it different?
Tacky, oh, very sticky. Much so.
Very more.
Well,
more
it potent. Depends. It can be tacky, resiny. Usually, by the time you get it, it's been dried and it's kind of almost brick like, almost like a adobe brick.
Ah.
And you tear off little pieces or you break off little pieces and smoke them in a pipe. And yeah, it's great. Gets you real high. Like crack.
I have a very negative
like crack at all.
I have a very negative association with hash because of the movie Midnight. Not Midnight Cowboy. Was it Midnight Run? What was the movie where he's stuck in a Turkish prison? And Randy Quaid's there?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that an Oliver Stone movie?
Yeah.
But,
Midnight Rider?
Hash is actually really, really good. It's just the THC taken straight off a plant and then
Midnight Express.
Midnight Express, thank you.
And then like bricked up. Now they have that the dab and the wax, which is supposed to be the same thing, but it's not exactly, but it is.
But it's not, but it is.
But it is, but it's not.
Let's be honest, it is not. All right. Anyway, sorry. James, back to your fact. Sorry about that.
So yes, outer space.
Contraband.
Dope smoking. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
John Young, who died January 5th, 2018, at the age of 87, famous for his
didn't live up to his name.
Moonwalks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Famous for his Apollo 16 moonwalks and his role as commander of the first space shuttle mission. As a NASA astronaut.
Why didn't they just go with that?
Is also remembered for a small scandal he created with a sneaky act, smuggling a corned beef sandwich into space. Young slipped the
sandwich. Wait, he thumbed a sandwich up his ass?
He did not keister a sandwich.
Oh, okay.
Young slipped the sandwich in his pocket just before launching
on his
Gemini 3.
His prison
and
pocket.
This is a weird thing that I noticed in First Man and in NASA, they refer to it as Gemini, not Gemini.
Gemini. Like Gemini Cricket?
Gemini is how I've always heard it pronounced.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Gemini Cricket.
Who was a Gemini. But in First Man, which is a really good movie.
Yeah.
And not specifically about just the Apollo mission and Neil Armstrong, but a lot of it.
His whole life.
Yeah. But yeah, they kept talking about the Gemini program.
Weird.
So before launching on Gemini 3 on March 23rd, 1965, first U.S. mission to carry two astronauts, Young and crewmate Gus Grissom. Safely made it to space, efficiently completed its objectives. Corned beef sandwich sparked a brief conversation between Young and Grissom, according to the Gemini 3 transcript. The chat lasted only about a minute of nearly 6-hour mission. "What is it?" Grissom asked. "Corned beef sandwich," Young replied. "Where did that come from?" Grissom asked. Answered Young, "I brought it with me. Let's see how it tastes. Smells, doesn't it?" Grissom tasted the sandwich, but quickly announced he would stick it back in his pocket because it was starting to break up. Young suggested the sandwich was a thought, not a very good one.
Hmm.
Replied Grissom, "Pretty good, though, if it would just hold together."
So,
shortly
you don't want bits of sandwich
mission,
floating around.
Yeah, it's probably dangerous.
And that was the thing. And it was a House subcommittee, and one member of Congress referred to it as a $30 million sandwich. Politicians cited safety concerns about crumbs interfering with spacecraft operations. Several senior NASA officials, including then Administrator James Webb, testified at the proceedings. Young recalled that the review in his 2012 memoir, Forever Young, today... The
Forever Young was the name of his memoir.
Yeah.
What a dork.
Today, the theater that took place inside that meeting room that day strikes me as totally comic, but I can assure you that those testifying for NASA at the time were not smiling.
All right.
Wow.
So a cited quote from that meeting comes from George Mueller, then NASA's associate administrator for manned spaceflight. "We've taken steps to prevent recurrence of corned beef sandwiches in future flights."
Thank God, because few people know this, but there was actually a corned beef sandwich on Challenger. It's true. Sure, that's what happened. You can't fuck around.
It's terrible.
They
did.
They fucked around. Found out. All right, Rod, what's your first fact?
Actually, my first fact is the...
It's a Russian dressing.
It was a sauerkraut, too, yeah.
It's like a damn snow globe in here. Mm. So anyways, my first fact is of the executioner. Back in the day when you would be sentenced to be executed and you'd go up there, it was customary to tip the executioner and to tip him well. My first thought was, fuck that guy. But here's the thing.
How well do you want this to go, buddy?
If you ever in your life wanted someone to do a really good job at what they're supposed to do, it's the guy swinging the axe to chop your fucking head off.
Yeah.
Because if that dude's lazy and his first hack, like, I don't know, hits you in the middle of the back somewhere.
Well, and famously when...
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention, guys.
When doesn't put a lot of effort into it and it's going to take like four times to get through.
Famously, Anne Boleyn, one of Henry VIII's wives, she was getting the chop and the guy missed and like cut half of her face off.
Yeah.
And I think her like last words were like, it's okay, take your time and aim or something like that.
Ugh. Yeah. So yeah, that was the idea of tipping the executioner is that you want him to be paying attention. You want him to pull his full effort into it and finish on one swing. Mm. And yeah, if he was pissed at you because you didn't give him a tip, maybe he wouldn't do that. So all of a sudden, tipping the executioner seems to make a little more sense.
Yeah, but you got to do it before the cut. It's not like when you go to the barber. You don't tip them before you get the haircut.
Right, right. You know, like on the way out. Oh, hey, here's a little something extra for you.
Yeah, from the basket, you're like, it's in my breast pocket. An extra $5 for you, good sir.
Keep the tip, as it were.
What if executioners, like, when it went out of style, like, you know, like I'm in radio, right? And I keep thinking, like, radio is let's be honest, it's on the downswing right now because there's a lot of new media, for instance, what we're doing, replacing it. So I think, like, how do my skills translate to other things that I can make money off of?
They don't.
And I wonder if we don't have to spend time making my future into the abysmal paradise that is going to be. But with an executioner, what do you go into? Like, maybe be a butcher, like a moil, like you can circumcise kids, like chippity chop. No problem.
Hold it still.
Yeah. I just need, okay, I don't use, most use a little scalpel. I'll use just a tiny little axe, little hatchet.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you were a really good executioner. And then that time ends. Yeah, what's your next obvious career choice?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you're a lumberjack.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. My second fact is this. Microsoft, pretty major company. You wouldn't think they would be on the forefront of doing something like this because they...
Seems like I've heard of them before.
They're very much in...
Bill Gates invented Microsoft.
He did, and the vaccine. So... When you get it, that's your update.
That's a Dr. Steve Brühl quote. That Brühl Gates invented Microsoft.
Microsoft is actually the opposite of Viagra. So Microsoft, very much in kind of keeping it safe, let's not rock the boat too much, we're making good money mode, did do something kind of amazing a few years ago. They adopted a four-day work week, not in the United States, but in Japan. And it's funny because when I tell people, as I say this all the time, Americans, by the average, work more hours than any other civilized country. People will say, well, what about Japan? And I'm immediately like, oh, do you not think Japan's civilized or what? And first of all, they don't actually work more hours than us. The average American works 80 hours in a two-week period. In Japan, it's like 60. And that's second.
Really?
In addition to reducing working hours, not only did they reduce how many hours people work, they cut it down to 4 days a week. It's not like they did, okay, you do 4 hours, but you do, or 4 days a week, but you do 10 hours a day. It was just,
I've done that.
4 hours, just 4 hours a week, four days a week. In addition to that, they also urged staff to cut down on the time they spend in meetings, and responded to email. And they got rid of meetings that lasted longer than 30 minutes. No meetings can last longer than 30 minutes. 90%.
Let's handle all this shit with email from now on.
Yeah. 90% of them said that they the employees loved it. By shutting down earlier each week, the company was able to save on other resources such as electricity and things like that. So it actually made them money. But you might say, but the employees got less work done. Actually, no. Productivity went up by almost 40% compared to the same time period the previous year. And the reason for that is pretty basic when you think about it. If you have 2 hours to do something, you're probably going to get it done in 2 hours. But if I tell you have 20 minutes to do something, you're much more likely to sit down, hunker down, focus. So it's all about focus. You give the average employee 40 hours in a week to do something, they're going to work for 40 hours. They're going to be there for 40 hours, but they're going to be working? Not necessarily. You give them...
Interesting.
You give them 32 hours to work, and they're going to get their shit done because they have less time to do it in.
Now, when I was doing... I did alarm systems and cameras and things like that for a living for a long time, mm-hmm. and I worked for a company that did... 4 10s instead of 5 8-hour yeah. days. You did 4 10-hour days, and we did not work on Fridays, and we actually got a lot more work done because for those 4 days we were on the job for a minimum of 8 hours.
Yeah.
So when you would get to the shop at 8,
like we got to close up because we're gonna come back tomorrow, and,
right?
Yeah.
We get to the shop at 8 o'clock in the morning. Everybody, these are what you're doing today. There's a little bit of BSing and some coffee drinking, and then you head out to your job, and then you get there and you get set up and you're like, where are we at today? All right, this is what we need to get done today. And then, you know, work ends at 5. So at 3:30 or 4, at least you're breaking down and packing up and figuring out what we need to wrap up today because we can't have it hanging here. And then tomorrow, where are we going to start and all that stuff? And then you go drive back to the shop. And then you BS and you coffee and you're gone. So yeah, you're talking 6 hours on the job a day, whereas we were easily on the job for 8 hours a day for those 4 days. And yeah, we got a lot more work done.
Well, I also,
and when they switched it back to, which pissed me off because they did it because companies we were working for were like,
oh,
you guys don't show up on Fridays. What the fuck is that?
Bunch of lazy slobs.
We're like, yeah, we work 4 10s. We get more work done this way. They're like, no, we want a company that's going to be here 5 days a week. And literally our boss went, okay, fine. You're that stupid. We'll go back to 5 days a week.
That sucks.
We were pissed. And yeah, productivity went way down.
Right. Well, I also wonder how much of it is if you have only a 2 day weekend on Friday, you might be like, fuck it. I'll just do it Monday.
Yeah.
But
oh, totally.
If you're on Thursday, you're like, well, I got to get it done because tomorrow, you know, this can't go without being done for 3 days.
Right.
I may not remember it on Monday.
Yeah, that's true. I might come in and be like, there's something I was supposed to do.
No, it was a big difference. And I know here again on Fridays, that was the day you had so many hours to do this job. And sometimes it was a big job. You have like, you know, 300 hours or whatever to do this job. And so you would bust your ass and get ahead so that Fridays we could fuck off all day. Like I literally sat in a movie theater and watched Good Will Hunting on the clock on a Friday because we were like, we're ahead.
We're done.
We don't have to do anything until Monday.
Yep.
So let's go see this movie that just came out with Robin Williams. I bet it's hilarious.
The problem is this will never...
It was not hilarious.
It will never get implemented in America because we have, like, what happened with your company? We have this dumb fascination with this puritanical work ethic of...
5 days a week.
5 days a week. I mean, you're lucky that we give you 2 days off. You are beholden to that company. You should thank them because not only do you get your health insurance from them, but... They're just giving you a job. They gave it to you. You didn't earn that job. They gave you a job.
Yeah.
Look, 24 hours in a day, 8 are for working, 8 are for sleeping, 8 are, you know, do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's your time.
Meanwhile, most of your work at an office job, not even an office job. When I worked at the railroad, most of my work was done within 2 to 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Done. If they had switched it up there, it would have been fine. It would have made no difference. In radio, it's a little different because, like, it's a new show every day and, you know, whatever. I would just have a day off. I don't know my productivity would change. It's not that different. Yeah. It's true. Yeah, I get most of my work done in 3 to 4 hours. James, yeah. What's your second fact?
Okay. This is about wallpaper in Victorian England.
Okay.
Mm.
1862.
I don't know how this is going to be interesting, by the way, but fine.
1862. Doubt me at your own peril.
Okay, we'll see.
I gave you fucking corned beef in space a couple minutes ago, and you're calling shit on my Victorian wallpaper?
Let's see how it goes.
1862, a prominent doctor named Thomas Orton nursed a family through a mysterious illness that ultimately killed all four of their children. In desperation, one of the things he started to do was make notes about their home and contents. He found nothing wrong with the water supply or the home's cleanliness. The one thing that worried him, the Turner's bedroom had green wallpaper. For Orton, it brought to mind an unsettling theory that had been doing the rounds in certain medical circles for years that wallpaper could kill.
What?
This theory held that even though nobody was eating the wallpaper, and people did know arsenic was deadly if eaten, it could cause people to get sick and die. They were making a green hue of wallpaper with arsenic and copper sulfate. It's a very, very vibrant color.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure it's beautiful. Especially if you lick the wallpaper.
Arsenic was everywhere in the Victorian period, from food coloring to baby carriages.
Baby carriages?
Wallpapers were at the center of a consumer controversy about what made something safe to have your home. It was called Shields Green.
And it's also for the color green. Like, yeah. the ugliest color. Like, it'd be great if they were doing it for, like, you know, like a deeper shade of blue or red even, but green of all of the colors.
Apparently, and, you know, they did. It was, they used arsenic in making a whole ton of stuff, and it would essentially off gas. Mm-hmm. So just over time,
you'd breathe it in.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't get green Victorian wallpaper.
Shields green.
You know, going back to a conversation we were having on Patreon, Ayn Rand was right. There should not be any government regulations on anything.
No,
we're fine. We're fine without them.
Wow.
So they were literally just making poison wallpaper, and these people were dying, and then they're like, do you think it's the wallpaper? Like, yeah, it's probably the arsenic in the wallpaper. No.
Like, okay, yeah.
To be fair to the wallpaper people, the arsenic is everywhere, though, so it could have been any number of things.
But it's a snazzy shade of green.
But yeah.
It's not bad.
It's to die for.
It's to die for, he says.
All right, no, that was interesting then. Rod. What's your second fact?
I'm looking up the fact that it says there was a color that killed Napoleon. Guess what?
Was it
Shields green? Shields green. The color that killed Napoleon.
Okay.
Okay. My second fact today is about cattle rustling in the state of Nevada. When was this? I was just in the 20s. That's right. In the in northern Nevada during the 1920s, there was a man known as Crazy Tex Hazelwood. Why he was named Tex, I don't know.
I'm assuming he's
from Texas. Crazy Tex Hazelwood.
He was actually from Nevada. That's why we called him Crazy Tex.
Yeah. 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 Wasn't there a movie where like, this is Tex, he's from New York?
No, it was King of the Hill. It was Brooklyn was from somewhere.
That's right.
And yeah.
Everybody was not from the place they were named after.
No, wait, no, that wasn't King. What the fuck was that from? No, it wasn't King of the Hill. It was Forrest Gump. He goes like, somebody was from blank, blah, 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 was from blah. And then there was Brooklyn. I wasn't sure where he was from. That's what it was. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, anyways, the point is, in the 1920s, Tex Hazelwood had great success as a cattle rustler. He was running all over ranch hands near Elko, Nevada, realized that they had heads of cattle missing pretty regularly, disappearing in pairs. They wanted desperately to figure out who the hell was stealing their cattle.
It was
but when they would go and look for tracks, you know, and things to find where the cattle went, it was all cattle tracks. There was no footprints. There was no horse hoof prints or anything like that. Just as if the cattle had decided on their own to wander off.
Mm.
Come to find out, crazy old Tex Hazelwood had a pair of shoes made that had calf prints under them.
Okay.
You know the old roller skates that you strap on to your own shoes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's just the flat part with the wheels under
it? Yeah.
And then they like buckle onto your own shoes? That's kind of what they look like.
Uh-huh.
But they have cow feet. And so he would go wearing these shoes and steal cattle. And then there was no human prints. And this like went on for a long time. And he was quite successful in it until one day they followed the tracks enough to catch him in his silly shoes with the cows red-handed, as it were. And now those shoes are in a museum in Nevada. In a shoe-seum, yes. The cattle rustling boots of crazy Tex Hazelwood.
Hmm.
That I just almost think sounds like foot news.
Stop it. Stop it. I'm not doing it. It only counts when I say it, and I'm not saying it.
You're not saying what?
Not saying it. Stop it. If you want to know what we're talking about, you need to listen to the Patreon show. I'm not doing it. Not doing it.
Because, yeah, it could have been news about feet.
That's fascinating. I saw a story that a guy, in Florida in the 40s and 50s, they were convinced that there were these giant penguins walking around. And this was before they were all on meth. They're convinced these giant penguins walking around because they would find these giant footprints on the beach, and they had like a scientist look at them, and the scientist was like, these belong to penguins. And so there must be giant penguins that nobody's seeing walking around the beach. And it turned out it didn't come out until 50 years later. This guy told everybody that it was actually him, and he put on these giant penguin feet that weighed like 30 pounds each and would just go stomping around the beaches in Florida.
Just for fun.
Just to mess
great
with people.
Exercise.
Yeah, great exercise. Oh, his calves were amazing. Amazing.
Hmm.
I don't know. If there's a shoe-seum in Nevada, that sounds like foot news to me.
It is not that which you said it was. It's
not what?
I said it's not fucking that.
Yeah, Northeastern Nevada Museum.
All right.
In Elko, Nevada. Houses the cow rustling boots of crazy Tex Hazelwood.
My third fact is this. We're all familiar with this scene, one of the most iconic scenes in cinematic history.
Down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger, those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Okay. Obviously very iconic scene from the movie Pulp Fiction. Well, Samuel Jackson, there's no reason to state this fact about when this happened other than it's kind of interesting, the portending doom. 2 days before 9/11 was in New York, so that would have been the 9th of September 2001. He's in New York at a Michael Jackson concert. His job is to introduce Whitney Houston and somebody else. I can't remember the other actor performer was. And he's there getting ready to put him up on stage when he starts hearing in his ear somebody reciting,
"Weak through the valley of darkness."
The Ezekiel speech, Ezekiel 25:15, or 25:17, from Pulp Fiction. He's hearing this voice, and it's a very familiar voice. He turns around, and it's Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando apparently loved Michael Jackson, was backstage at this concert and reciting Samuel Jackson's thing from Pulp Fiction. And Samuel Jackson's like, "Oh my God, this is so cool." Like, and he's like, "You've seen the movie?" And he's like, "Yeah, of course I've seen the movie. It's one of the greatest movies ever, and you're amazing in it, and I love you, man. You do such great work. Give me a call." And Samuel Jackson's like, "Fuck yeah." So he gives him a phone number.
"You're Marlon motherfucking Brando. Hells yeah, I'm gonna call you."
I'm assuming not a couple days later, which would have been 9/11, which would have been awkward. Like, hey, I know, like, the world is melting down, man, but...
You said call!
You said you like me. But it's a
you like me? Yeah. Or just, like me?
Yeah, I know the second tower just came down, but is our love growing up? No, he didn't call. I don't know. He said it was a couple months later. He calls the number, like, forgot about it for a while, calls it. And on the other end of the line, the person picking up the phone answers it as a Chinese restaurant. Says it's like, I don't know, Ping's Palace of Pork or something like that, whatever. And Samuel Jackson's like, I'm sorry, I was calling for Marlon Brando. And they're like, oh, he's here. You want to talk to him? And he's like, yeah.
So he hangs out at this Chinese restaurant?
Yeah, kind of. So they put Marlon Brando on the phone. Marlon Brando ends up talking to Samuel Jackson for like an hour. He says, like, they just talk about acting, the craft. And I'm talking about the craft of acting, not the movie, The Craft. And
although,
and have a great conversation. He hangs up. And before he fully hangs up, he goes, wait, hold on. I need to ask, what the fuck's going on with the Chinese restaurant? And Marlon Brando explained to him, oh, that's just how I screen my calls. I have somebody answer the phone for me using a Chinese accent, claiming it's a Chinese restaurant. So if it's somebody else calling for me, they think they just got the wrong number. If they ask, though, for Marlon Brando that he gave me this number, then I know that it's fine. Samuel Jackson said he called.
How many people go, fuck, never mind, sorry, and just hang up?
So he says he called back a couple months later, and that time it was a Chinese laundry. So I want to get into this because, first of all, it's amazing to me that Marlon Brando, who was notorious for not memorizing any lines for his movies, that's what made him such a great natural actor, was because he actually didn't memorize his lines. He memorized Samuel Jackson's lines from Pulp Fiction.
Well, he had an alternate film that came out a little after called Plump Friction.
But second of all, is that really an effective way of screening your calls?
No.
I mean, if you're screening people that are randomly dialing numbers in hopes of Marlon Brando answering the phone,
right,
I guess.
But who's doing that? And because they gave him the phone when you said, oh, but I was calling for Marlon Brando. So I guess it's just to screen out people who aren't that determined to talk to him.
I think I'm going to start calling Chinese restaurants and asking to speak to Marlon Brando.
I mean, maybe it had to be like, maybe it's a party left out of the story. Maybe they said, who's calling? It's Samuel Jackson, motherfucker. Oh, I knew it was you when you said motherfucker. If you hadn't said that, I would have known.
It's so, Samuel L. motherfucking Jackson.
I did read a thing, though, about him refusing to learn lines, and they would literally tape pages of a script on the backs of lamps and just shit in the room of the scene.
It was in The Godfather, yeah.
So he could just turn and read it.
Right. So... didn't memorize his own lines. Samuel Jackson's down pat. Either that or he just memorized the Bible, you know.
Have you ever... Well, it's not a real passage.
Oh, it's not?
No. It's bits and pieces.
Well, that's a fact.
One,
that's addendum to this. I didn't know that.
No. It's similar to something, and it borrows aspects, but yeah, it doesn't exist.
Wow.
It's like a made up... Yeah. Also,
I didn't know that.
Have you ever seen the documentary about... fucking Apocalypse Now.
The Heart of Darkness.
It is so much more strange than the movie Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. Martin
and there's
Sheen.
Certain things that I thought were movie magic. Like Dustin Hoffman was just that fucked up the whole time.
Dennis Hopper.
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman. He was too, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper
wasn't in the movie.
Right. Dennis Hopper was just that fucked up the whole time. You think he's playing this great acid trippy fucking character where he's, you know, being all weird and shit. No, dude, that was just him at the time.
I remember watching that movie and not really understanding anything that was going on, but just being blown away by how amazing everything looked. Like the cinematography in that movie, Apocalypse Now, is insane. It is so good.
The opening scene, that movie, like, I had seen it several times, and thought that it was this amazing acting job by everyone.
Yeah, no.
And then found out like the opening scene is truly just
Martin Sheen going nuts and
fucked up in a room, yep, trashing the room.
Yeah, he slit his hand open. And like they had to stop filming because he could have died if they didn't get him medical attention.
Right. Yeah. And then
heart attack during production.
Yeah, he had a heart attack during it from too much cocaine.
And then fucking Brando's just gone.
Yeah.
Like just fucking bizarre, whacked out of his mind. And they just like keep filming. We'll fucking piece it together and make it make sense later.
Yeah. My favorite things in Hot Shots is when he's going down the river and like doing this. It might be part two, actually. I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah, where they pass each other.
Yeah, they pass each other. You were great in Wall Street. Anyway. James, what is your second fact?
My third and final fact.
I'm sorry, your third and final fact. Jesus Christ.
Third and final fact.
James, what's your third and final fact?
For my turd fact.
Hey, what? It's like your turd sandwich?
Yeah.
I'm a turd fact today.
In 1980, chemist Glenn Seaborg solved a centuries-old problem in alchemy and turned non-precious metal to gold.
What?
Okay. So if you're familiar with alchemy.
Yeah, I know what alchemy is. There was the idea of turning regular metals into gold. It was a thing in like Romeo and Juliet when they got their poison. They went to an alchemist because apparently they couldn't turn lead into gold, but they could make you poison.
Many scientists and thinkers from different parts of the world shared a desire for less disease and death, more wealth and fortune. Alchemy simultaneously and independently appeared all over the world. For example, the Chinese, led by the philosophy of Taoism, tried to come up with various tinctures that were supposed to cure disease and extend human life. At the same time, alchemists in ancient Greece hoped to achieve immortality and satisfy their desire for wealth. Also in India, the sacred sculptures of the Veda connected to gold and the notion of eternal life. So Indian alchemists experimented with lead, sulfur, and mercury in order to fuse them and create gold. Okay, so we get to 1980. Pioneering American chemist Glenn T. Seaborg managed to turn a small quantity of bismuth, an extremely stable metal that often serves as a substitute for lead, into gold. Seaborg spent most of his career as a researcher and professor at the University of California, Berkeley. In the early 1940s, he contributed to the development of the Manhattan Project through his research of nuclear chemistry. Okay. Used extensive knowledge of nuclear chemistry and nuclear physics to conduct the first successful alchemical experiment in the history of humanity. He employed a particle accelerator to remove protons and neutrons from several thousand atoms of bismuth and managed to transmute them into atoms of gold. Although several thousand atoms is a quantity so small that it is not even visible to the naked eye,
okay,
Seaborg proved
you could
that alchemy
it.
Has been pursuing a completely achievable goal for the past several thousand years.
Oh my God.
One might ask, if Seaborg managed to produce gold out of non-precious metals, why aren't people using this revolutionary technique to produce massive amounts of gold? The answer to the question is the fact that the process discovered by Seaborg is so incredibly complex and so immensely expensive.
Right, it's not worth it.
It would require quadrillions of dollars to produce just an ounce of gold.
Yeah, it's basically like saying this guy invented unicorns by stabbing a horse in the head, though. This isn't the same thing as alchemy. Alchemy is supposed to be you take a piece of lead and turn it into gold.
He did.
Not really. He turned particles into gold.
He turned bismuth into gold.
Whatever, yeah. Bismuth is. Bismuth sounds like it's valuable on its own.
Bismuth sounds like a soup you would get at a Jewish delicatessen.
Bismuth sounds like a pimp with a speech
don't
impediment.
Don't mix bismuth with pleasure.
Yeah. Talking about, don't fuck with my bismuth, bitch.
Don't mix bismuth with pleasure. And that's why it's so expensive.
But
to
bismuth
turn it
is
gold.
My pleasure.
Hey, great pleasure, my bismuth.
Mm. All right. Finally, Rod, what's your
third
and
final fact for me? Is there was an invasion in Australia in 1859. There was an Australian
1859. You want to just start over? Let's just start that one over.
Where's the
Rod, what's your third and final fact?
There's an invasion in Australia that began in 1859,
mm-hmm,
that is still seriously, seriously affecting the continent of Australia?
Yeah, it's a continent.
A man named Thomas Austin was an Englishman who moved to Australia, bought a bunch of land in Victoria. Australia.
Okay.
He was talking to his friends he met there in Australia and telling them, they were talking about hunting, telling them how much fun he had hunting rabbits back in England. And they didn't have rabbits in Australia. So he called a friend in England in 1859 and had him send them 24 wild rabbits. Oh, he let the rabbits loose on his land so he and his friends could hunt them and show them how fun it was to hunt rabbits.
Wait a second. Do rabbits fuck like rabbits?
Yes, they do. Yeah. Yes, they do. Huh. Those 24 rabbits.
Rabbit fuck like beasts.
In a matter of, where was it? In the 20s, in 70 years, those 24 rabbits became 10 billion fucking rabbits.
Oh my God.
10 billion fucking rabbits. Like happening.
Yeah.
18 to 30 single, good Lord, they just keep reproducing and spreading out all over the country at a rate of 80 miles a year.
Mm.
They have destroyed. Here's the thing. There is like a fucking worm in Australia that can kill you. Like there's spider clouds and drop bears,
but
and like
adorable
certain
little
times
rabbits.
It rains and yeah. The rain can kill you. Nothing fucking kills rabbits. So they're just running free, destroying the fucking country. Like there have been massive, currently to today, there are around 2.5 million square miles of Australia with an estimated population of 200 million rabbits. They keep trying to kill them. They keep bringing in new things to get rid of the rabbits, but they still Nothing keep works. Spreading out.
Yeah.
Have they tried feral, cobras?
The feral rabbits, literally nothing is killing them. So they are fucking shit up. Like they kill... because they can burrow and because they love grasslands, which is most of Australia, they're all over the place. They eat these little seedlings of trees, which has then started to kill off other species of animals.
Jesus.
Because they don't have those trees to eat
yeah.
and to
like
hide
when,
in
once
and
something
stuff like that.
New is introducing an ecosystem and it's uninhibited. It'll fuck everything up. What they need to do is like an Avengers type of initiative. With Elmer Fudd, Yosemite Sam, and like that opera singer, or maybe it's more of a Suicide Squad type of thing, but just get all them together and send them to New South Wales or wherever
they
this
have
was.
Brought in.
You
they have
constantly
like,
have trouble
taught people to trap and shoot rabbits. They have literally brought in mosquitoes and fleas and
mosquitoes.
Flies. That carry diseases that will kill.
Yeah, because
that
will kill
that
humans too.
Rabbits.
What are they fucking crazy? Oh, it only kills rabbits. Okay,
right. Supposedly,
yeah,
yeah. Because diseases never change and
right, never mutate. That never right, happens. Could never jump from one animal to like a human. That no. like but say yeah. like a bat. Like say a bat got a disease and then like it couldn't spread to humans.
It cracks.
You'd have
me
to
up
have some kind of Batman.
Rabbits Man have bat. Lived in Australia for over 150 years and they just
okay.
are destroying the place it's, and just keep spreading out and spreading out and they keep trying to control the population. But it just, it's Australia. Like literally, I think if you breathe too deeply, you'll die.
Yeah.
Like everything there will kill you.
Yeah.
Like
it's good. It's
but not
good.
Rabbits. Now the rabbits can kill humans now. They've evolved to that point, I think. Right. But nothing
that's
kills
the
fucking
Australia.
Rabbits.
So it's interesting.
That's just the Australia getting into them.
You brought this up because I was just reading a story earlier today that freaked me out about Australia. And it's that in Australia, they're currently in New South Wales, where this rabbit thing was also happening, they're having a plague of mice because of COVID.
Because of COVID?
Because people aren't going out as much. So they're storing a lot of food in their houses. The mice are then breaking into the houses in rural areas. And I swear to God, I've never seen a video that creeped me out more. And I wouldn't show it to you because I know you hate mice, Rod.
No, that would fuck me up, dude. That would give me
just
nightmares.
Literally, like the ground is moving.
Ah!
Yeah, it's just terrifying. These mice
okay,
are just
now I have
everywhere.
To keep my feet up.
everywhere in New South Wales. They just and like they shine a light and the mice go this way and it's just, oh my God, it's horrifying. And somebody said they have a bucket. It's a 5 gallon bucket, or 50 gallon bucket, I mean, that they have. And then they set bait on the top, and then the mice fall into the bucket. He said he filled this 50 gallon drum up in 2 nights with dead mice.
Oh my God.
With mice. And then they're like, well, what do you do with it? He's like, I just seal it up and then just roll it away. And then, you know, hopefully they die.
They take care of themselves.
Yeah. And they're like, well, yeah. did you notice like a decrease in it? And then the mice, he's like, it didn't make a fucking dent.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Australia. Don't go there. Stay away. Stay away.
I always thought it was like this cool place to go. Like it was like the Kentucky of the rest of the world. You know what I mean?
Why would Kentucky like, be the cool place you pick to go to?
Kentucky's the worst. like the crazy Southern shit that goes on in America. That all goes on in Australia.
It's Florida because there's crazy people. There's things that'll kill you, but also there's some fun things to do.
Right.
Yeah.
But you only get out of there if you're a Hutchins or a Hemsworth.
That's true. And that's the show.
Take this, bitch.